Sometimes in workplaces, when a business is needing to kind of shake things up a little bit, an employer might come along and say to his or her employees, you need to think outside the box. Meaning by that, you need to do things that maybe you're not accustomed to doing. Well, this evening, I'm kind of preaching outside of the box for me. There was a while back that someone asked me to give consideration to a topic and maybe present a lesson on it. And I'm always glad when someone does that. I can't always guarantee that I can come up with a good lesson on it. But this particular topic has been of interest to me. And as I began to think about it, study about it, I realized that I believe there are practical things for us to consider as we talk about this idea. The idea of witchcraft has long been with us. In fact, as we'll see even this evening, it stretches way, way back into history, where even God, as His people early on are beginning to form nationhood, God is going to say things to them about this very topic. And as we'll see before the lesson is over, that stretches on even to our present day. So what does God want us to know about this, and what application does it have for Christians living in the 21st century? Well, while this may not be a typical topic, I believe it is one that can show us how people do depart from God's ways. And I also think it shows us the dangers that we might face at times in straying from the ways of God. So this evening, I encourage you to get your Bibles out. We're going to be looking at several passages, especially here at the beginning of the lesson, in which God begins talking about this subject, telling His people about it. Let's go ahead on over to the book of Leviticus. The book of Leviticus. One of the things that I believe we see underlying the discussion that God has with His people on the matter of witchcraft is the whole comparison that He has in the interlinking of this topic with that of idolatry. Now, what I'd like for us to do to begin with this evening is to first of all see what Moses says about witches. What does he say about those who practice witchcraft? Well, there's several things that's told to us here within the book of Leviticus and the book of Deuteronomy. Let's go ahead, first of all, as we look to chapter 19 of the book, Leviticus chapter 19. Here, as is typical in the law of Moses, God is giving a direct command. And as we look to verse 31, he directly tells the people this: do not turn to mediums or necromancers. Do not seek them out, and so make yourselves unclean by them. I am the Lord your God. Interesting word that the ESV uses here. Your translation may or may not have it. And that's the term necromancer. We don't use that very often in our everyday conversation. But basically, if you look at the definition of this word, what it means is someone, literally defined, someone who interrogates the dead. So in other words, when you're talking about a medium or you're talking about a necromancer, you're talking about someone who makes the claim that he or she can contact the other side, can contact the spirit world. And because of this contact that the necromancer has with the spirit world, he or she can find out things about the future, and then whomever the client is who's there seeking this information, typically for pay, can get that information to them. And so what does God say? God says, I want you to have nothing to do with these people. I don't want you to have anything to do with those who interrogate the dead. And I think it very interesting what God says in relation to that, where He says, so make yourselves unclean by them. Now, that's a term that we find throughout the law. The idea being, here is someone who has done something in violation of the Word of God, whether that be touching a dead body, whether that be eating a food that's off limits. But in this case, the term unclean is used as well for someone who is seeking out that information, someone who is seeking out what this person supposedly is garnering from the other side. Well, let's move down a little bit further. As we go to chapter 20 and verse 6, here the Lord says, if a person turns to mediums and necromancers, whoring after them, I will set my face against that person and will cut him off from among his people. Again, you're noticing here the seriousness that God is addressing to this. As we come to verse 6 of chapter 20, I think another interesting thought to look at in our discussion is the fact that God is using terminology here that He typically reserves for those who go after idols. The term whoring after something is typically found in relation to the people of Israel when they went into idolatry, when they began that practice of idolatry. Well, I don't think it's any accident that as God here is talking about same people, the mediums, necromancers, that He's using language very much associated with those who would go after idolatry, to go after the following of other gods. Now note once again the seriousness here. Before He said, it makes you unclean. Here He adds to that, He says, I will set my face against that person and I will cut that person off from my people. Serious stuff. Here is a sin, here is involvement with a practice where God says, this will alienate you from my people, this will separate you from my people. Let's look at one more passage here in the book of Leviticus. Going down to chapter 20 and verse 27, kind of sealing off for us the seriousness of this sin. God says in verse 27, a man or a woman who is a medium or a necromancer shall surely be put to death. They shall be stoned with stones, their blood shall be upon them. Now we know that the death penalty under the law of Moses was reserved, and I hate to say the worst sins, but understand what I mean by that. We might say the sins that had the most serious consequences against the people as a whole. Remember what else had the death penalty? If you go after other gods, if you try to bring these gods in, the Israelites were to find that person, separate that person, and put that person to death because of the seriousness of that. So, in these chapters of Leviticus, what do we find? Someone who is practicing such things, first of all, is an abomination to God. Secondly, is associated with those who are unclean, those who need to be cut off. And finally, God says, I want that person to be put to death. Now, let's add one more passage to our discussion here. Go over to Deuteronomy chapter 18. Deuteronomy chapter 18. Moses here, giving his final speeches, has something to say about this as well. We look down to verse 9, and let's notice the warning that Moses gives to the people here. He says, when you come into the land that the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not learn to follow the abominable practices of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who burns his son or daughter as an offering, anyone who practices divination or tells fortunes or interprets omens, or a sorcerer or a charmer or a medium or a necromancer or one who inquires of the dead. For whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord, and because of these abominations, the Lord your God is driving them out before you. Now Moses expands that list from the words we've been looking at. Note who else he's including this. Those who practice divination. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Those who tell fortunes, those who interpret omens, those who are sorcerers, charmers, and then the two we've been reading about. He says, all of these things, if you are practicing those things, it is an anathema to God. It's abomination to God. And God is driving out the people of Canaan because of these kinds of practices. Now, why else do we know God was driving out the people of Canaan? It's because they had turned to idolatry. So again, I believe we're finding this link between the two, that those who practice such things, the sorcerers, the diviners, the fortune tellers, are very much in association with those idolaters who were found in the land of Canaan, who God says, I am driving out of the land. All right, now with all of that in mind, these passages from the law of Moses, hopefully what we're seeing is the connection between witchcraft and idolatry. That the reason God hated this sin so was the reason that He hated idolatry so. Because it was pulling people away from Him. It was pulling them toward things that were very ungodly. And so, as we consider that, let's look a little bit further at this link. Now, these mediums, or the witches, sometimes it's translated, as we talk about them, they sought their power from ungodly sources. I mean, that's the point that we're making here. That's the point that we're seeing. Now, many times what would happen is that they would have some kind of object in which they could supposedly use this object to channel some spirit or some demigod. And we know that term, not one of the upper echelon gods, but one that was kind of a second class god. That they could have some kind of object, and that's where the word diviner comes from. If someone would divine something, it meant that he or she had this object, and through this object, he or she could communicate with the dead, or could communicate with this spirit, or could communicate with this God. As we look at many of these pagan religions of Old Testament days, what we find is that often the idol would serve as that object. Now you would go into the temple, and here would be this idol, and that would be the object, that would be the diviner's object through which this spirit, or in this case, this God, could be contacted. All right, now, is everything linking up with all of this? Why does God consider it unclean? Why does God consider it an abomination? Why does God consider it something worthy of death? Because this fit right in with the idolatrous practices of the time. And he tells his people, I don't want you having anything to do with that. But what do we find about these mediums and these necromancers? What we find is that they were using these very things. And so that leads us to another Old Testament idea, where God says the practices in which you are involved are not only ungodly, the term he's going to use here is demonic. He's going to say that these practices in which you are involved are associated with things of the demonic realm. Note again some passages with me on this. If we look to Leviticus chapter 17 and verse 7, now your translation, it may have something different here. And we'll talk about that here in just a second. But this is how it reads in the ESV. So they shall no more sacrifice their sacrifices to goat demons, after whom they whore. This shall be a statute forever for them throughout their generations. We look on to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 32 and verse 17. God says this, they sacrifice to demons that were no gods, to gods they had never known, to new gods that had come recently, whom your fathers had never dreaded. Okay, again, associating these practices with the term demonic. Finally, if we note in Psalm 106 and verse 37, in relation to specifically the people of the land of Canaan, it says they sacrificed their sons and their daughters to the demons. All right, so in all three of those passages, what we find is the term demon being used. You know, if you knew some things early in life that you knew later in life, you could make some changes, couldn't you? If I had known some things early in life, I would have learned Hebrew and Greek. Because when you don't know that, you have to depend on somebody who does, and I don't like that. So I'm going to tell you right up front, what I'm having to do now is to depend on someone who says they know this. So you might want to explore this a little bit further. That being said, if I understand correctly, those who know the language say that the word translated demon here is very difficult to translate. That really, it's very difficult to find the exact English word for that. And thus, in some of these passages, you'll find it saying they sacrifice to the goat demons, kind of the satyrs is what we would think about. You find other times it talking about the demons, and that may not be exactly the correct term. But I did run across this quote, which I think sums up at least the intent of what we're looking at here. He says, the word translated demons in the revised version is shehem, a term used only twice and both times in connection with the rites and abominations of heathen worship. Now, on the surface, we might say, well, if they're sacrificing to demons, these idols are demons, that maybe it was demons that set these things up. Well, that's a possibility. But what many of the people who know the language say is that no, what the writers are actually doing is seeking to tell us this is something associated with the non-godly realm. And so the term demon kind of sums that up, or demonic kind of sums that up, that these practices are those things that are associated with someone who is opposed to God. Now, with that said, a medium or a witch's association with such practices shows how God linked this idea with pagan idolatry, with things that were viewed in the ungodly realm, things that were viewed as opposed to Him. And thus God links their sin with idolatry. Let's take just a minute and sum all this up, what we've seen so far. As God spoke against witchcraft or necromancy, what He's saying in that in the Old Testament is, this is an association with something that is totally opposed to me. This is someone who is involved in idolatrous practices. This is someone who is seeking to divine something by a spirit contrary to me, by a false god, and thus that was the reason for God's hatred of it. Now at this point, let's kind of move into a little bit different area. God also spends some time telling us about specific cases of people who practiced such things. And one of the things that we find coming out very clearly in all of these examples is that the people were charlatans. That these people were seeking to fool others. They were seeking to deceive. And so there are times when we might think, well, was there something to this witchcraft that was practiced? Did they have some kind of magic that they could perform? Well, I suppose that's a possibility. But as we look at these examples that God gave, I believe what God is telling us is that these people who were associated with this sin were also associated with the sin of deception. Now, there was no magic there. There was no real power they were getting. It was just simply something that was done to deceive. Let's start way back in the book of Exodus, chapter 7. You remember what's going on here. Moses is showing these plagues, bringing the plagues on the land of Egypt, and Pharaoh has his magicians beside of him here. And let's note what these magicians are able to do. Verse 11 of chapter 7, it says, "Then Pharaoh summoned the wise men and their sorcerers, and they, the magicians of Egypt, also did the same by their secret arts." Talking about what Moses and Aaron had just done. Verse 22, "But the magicians of Egypt did the same by their secret arts, so Pharaoh's heart remained hardened, and he would not listen to them as the Lord had said." We go over to chapter 8 and verse 7. It says, "The magicians did the same by their secret arts and made frogs come upon the land of Egypt." We know then they're unable to do it after this point. I wondered for a long time if maybe these magicians actually were practicing some kind of black magic. And then I read something that really made me think about that. If these men truly had been magic, if these men truly were practicing this art of witchcraft, would the greater thing have not been to reverse those plagues? To turn the water from the blood back to water? To get rid of the frogs? What they were able to do, I am convinced, through trickery and sleight of hand, was simply to make it appear that they could mimic these miracles. However they did that, I don't know. But the more I consider this passage, the more I come to believe that what they were doing was actually just a trickery, just a magician's trick. So that Pharaoh would be comforted in thinking, first of all, they could retain their position. They're not going to lose that. And second of all, that his gods could outdo the God of Moses. Well, let's look at another example that God gives us. This one probably the most telling of all of them. Go with me over to 1 Samuel chapter 28. 1 Samuel chapter 28. We're jumping a number of years in the Bible story. We're very near the end of King Saul's reign, and King Saul is in trouble. God won't talk to him. King Saul has made himself just repulsive to God, not obeying Him, and so God will not communicate with him, so Saul's going to try something else. He's going to try to communicate by one of these necromancers, by one of these mediums. And so here we find all of this going on. We come down to, let's pick up in verse 7. It says, "Then Saul said to his servants, 'Seek out for me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her.' And his servant said to him, 'Behold, there is a medium at Endor.' So Saul disguised himself and put on other garments and went, and he and two men with him. And they came to the woman by night. And he said, 'Divine for me by a spirit.'" Okay, let me pause there for a minute. Probably she's one of these people who has the sacred object. She's got something in her house that supposedly she can use to contact the dead. He says, "Divine for me by a spirit, and bring up for me whomever I shall name to you." Now, she's a little timid about this. Verse 9, "The woman said to him, 'Surely you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and the necromancers from the land. Why then are you laying a trap for my life to bring about my death?'" Now, this was typical of King Saul. There were times when he would pick out one idea and he would pursue it with great zeal. And so getting rid of these witches out of the land had been one of them. So he makes a promise to her. Verse 10, "As the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing." Verse 11, "The woman said, 'Whom shall I bring up for you?' And he said, 'Bring up Samuel for me.'" Verse 12, she goes into action. And it says, "When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman said to Saul, 'Why have you deceived me? You are Saul.'" Now, I want you to think about something here. If this was a woman who could easily contact the dead and could bring them back up for communications, doesn't it appear a little odd to you that it scares her when it actually works? That when something actually happens, like she said she could do, she is terrified by it. Let's look at one other thing about this account. "The king said to her," verse 13, "'Do not be afraid. What do you see?' And the woman said to Saul," now listen to what she says, "'I see a God coming up out of the earth.'" That ties right in with our Old Testament ideas of witchcraft. Remember, witchcraft and idolatry, very much interlinked. And so she's saying, well, this spirit is actually coming up. You know, the one by whom I'm divining, that spirit is actually coming up. The main point I want us to see from this, though, is her fraudulency. The fact that she is terrified when it actually works the way that she's supposed to, that she said it was supposed to. Obviously, it's the hand of God that's causing this to happen. Well, let me give you just a couple more examples. When we look to the book of Isaiah, there's two passages here that give us a little insight into these mediums. In chapter 8 and verse 19, the Lord speaking through Isaiah says, "And when they say to you, 'Inquire of the mediums and the necromancers,'" now listen to this, "'who chirp and mutter.'" Should not a people inquire of their God? Should they inquire of the dead on behalf of the living? If you're talking and someone describes your talking as chirping and muttering, that's not a compliment. That's not something where someone's saying, wow, this guy knows what he's talking about, and that's exactly what God is saying here. These people chirp and they mutter. In other words, through their trickery, through their deception, what they're trying to do is to lead people away from God, trying to lead them after some other idea. One other passage we look at in chapter 29 and verse 4. He says, "And you will be brought low. From the earth you shall speak, and from the dust your speech will be bowed down. Your voice shall come from the ground like the voice of a ghost, and from the dust your speech shall whisper." God in this case is actually making a play on this idea of contacting the dead. Because what these mediums did is actually practiced a form of ventriloquism. And what they learned to do is actually throw their voice where it made it sound as though a voice was rising up out of the ground. And so God is saying to His people, "I'm going to bring you so low that your voice will be the voice of a ghost." He's not saying that literally. What He's doing is He's saying, just as these mediums, these witches say that a ghost is speaking to you out of the ground, That's where your voice will be coming from. Nonetheless, look at what he's telling us about these people. Trickery, deception. They're trying to make someone believe they're hearing a voice when it's actually just their voice being thrown. Just a ventriloquist trick. Two examples from the New Testament we might mention just in passing. We won't take time to turn there, but you remember in the book of Acts, chapter 8, Simon the sorcerer. Simon practiced magic and had quite a following. And then he became a Christian. But do you remember what it says about him? How impressed he was with the apostles' miracles? Now that tells us something. If he was impressed by their miracles, what does it say about his own magic? He knew the difference. He understood that what he did was deceptive. What they did was real, even to the point where he said, look, how about I buy that from you? How about I give you a contribution and you let me do some of that? And of course, he gets berated for that and repents and confesses his sin before God for that. Just a little bit later in Acts chapter 19, verses 18 and 19, it said, when these pagans had become Christians, they gathered all of their magic books up together, they burned them, and the value was very, very great that they lost because of that. But they understood these things associated with idolatry, these things associated with an ungodly realm, we want to put away from us. We want nothing to do with those things. And so what we find is in almost every example, well, in every example, that God is showing us the trickery and the deception. And He's showing us that the power of God could not be trumped. These people were simply attempting to deceive. Now that kind of gives us a background of what the Bible says on the subject. Let's think for just a minute now about modern day magic, though. I began doing just a little bit of research on this, and I realized that it would take some time to actually get through all of the stuff on modern day magic. One area that I began to explore in preparation for this sermon was Wicca. Probably most of you have heard of that. That's kind of an old form of witchcraft that's been brought back, and so it's considered new again. And it's kind of an umbrella term, from what I understand, that there's all kinds of people practicing all kinds of things who refer to themselves as Wiccans. And what I want to do is just give you a few quotes. We're not going to spend just a great deal of time on this. But let me just put some things up that kind of describe this idea. This is a definition, and I don't know who to give credit to for this, because you can find it in several locations. But kind of a standard definition, Wicca is a neo-pagan, earth-centered religion that has its modern origins in the teaching and practice of the original English Wiccan, Gerald Gardner. Today, Wicca is experiencing dramatic growth as teens reject what they perceive as Christian paternalism, homophobia, and insensitivity to the environment. While stereotypes of Wiccans as Satanist or sinister spellcasters are spurious, the worldviews of Christianity and Wicca are nonetheless worlds apart. Basically, what's going on with the modern-day witchcraft of Wicca is they have gone back to some of these ancient cultures, the Nordic culture in particular, and they have brought a number of those pre-Christian beliefs forward, a number of those gods forward, and now they are, in a sense, serving those gods as a part of that. That's where the term neo-pagan comes from. It's new, but yet it's old. It's something that's been brought forward. Notice with me this as well. Modern 20th century Wiccans draw their religious ideology from the Mother Earth cults of the Celts and Nordic peoples of pre-Christian Europe. The word in Old English has masculine and feminine endings and denotes both men and women using magic arts. The word victim in English has the same derivation as Wicca and originally meant a living human being set apart to be sacrificed to a deity. So we're not talking about something here that was just benign, you know, that was just something that was kind of for fun. What we're talking about in its original form was a religion that actually called on people to offer human sacrifice. Now, I want you to note something in what we see here. They draw their religious ideology from the Mother Earth cults. Heard that term before, Mother Earth? It's with us, isn't it? We know that quite a bit. Yet, what do we find? And we'll see this hopefully drawn out here in just a minute. That actually they are practicing a very intense form of environmentalism. Believing that there is a goddess known as Mother Earth, who is actually the one who, kind of like in Old Testament days, was the demigod who's giving them this power, the one in whom they're practicing their religion. So that gives us a little bit of the idea of this. Now, one other quote, and this is a little bit dated here. This comes from 1993. According to a recent Ms. Magazine article, witchcraft, this is with the Wiccan religion, is about wholeness, about celebrating one's intimacy with the goddess and the earth, who are one and the same. There are 200,000 women and men practicing the old religion, or Wicca, as it's called in the United States. The Institute for the Study of American Religion in Santa Barbara, California, claims that witchcraft and paganism are the fastest growing religions in the country, countering the rise of Christian fundamentalism. So that gives us just a little bit more on the subject. Again, pointing out the idea of the earth religion, that the mother goddess of earth is the one who's being served and worshiped, and that it's through this that that practice of magic, which they spell in a different way, by the way, if you study this out, to kind of draw a distinction between what they practice and so-called black magic. But they do all of this in the name of this goddess, and this is catching up. So we say, well, that's just people who are silly, right? That's just people who really don't have a lot of sense who are doing that thing. Well, 2010, this year, back in the winter, the U.S. Air Force provided a place for Wiccan worship. For those members, core members of the Air Force who practice the Wiccan religion, the U.S. Air Force at their academy took the time to set up a place where they could practice this. This is from their press release. The Air Force Academy has set aside an outdoor worship area for pagans, Wiccans, Druids, and other earth-centered believers, school officials said Monday. So this is not something that's necessarily just out there on the fringe. While yes, it is, nonetheless, it's being brought into a more mainstream practice. I found a couple of quotes interesting that they quoted from the man in charge of this. He said, being with nature and connecting with it is kind of the whole point, said Tech Sergeant Brandon Longcrier, who sponsors the group and describes himself as a pagan. It will dramatically improve the atmosphere, the mindset, and the actual connection. Lieutenant Colonel William Ziegler, one of the Academy's chaplains, pay attention to that, said designating the space is part of the school's efforts to foster religious tolerance and to defend the constitutional guarantee of religious freedom. And he goes on to say that we provide a place for Christians, we provide a place for Jews, we provide a place for Muslims, and therefore we need to provide a place for these people who practice this pagan religion. It's with us today. The idea of witchcraft, very much here. And one thing I want you to see with this, and this is a subject maybe for another day, but something for you to think about. Don't miss the link between the pagan practice Wicca and the modern environmental movement. I am not a conspiracist. I promise you, I'm not. I don't look for witches under every corner, and I don't look for people who are doing bad things. However, you look at some of the people who are most associated with the modern environmental movement, and you will find people who are very much associated with the Wiccan religion. I'm a firm believer in recycling, mainly because of my conservative nature. If you can use it again, use it again. Don't pay extra money for something. However, when you get into the extremes of this movement, what you are finding people here who believe they are honoring Mother Earth, this goddess, by their treatment of the earth. So I just tell you that to be careful as your kids bring a lot of this stuff home from school. Don't panic, don't overreact, but just be aware. Just consider this point. Also, I would remind us that modern day mediums, fortune tellers, astrologers would all fit into this category as well. Should that shock us? Are we surprised by all of this? No. All of this should come as no surprise to us. Because as people reject God, they're going to look for something to put in His place. We need to worship. We are designed to worship. And when people say there is no God, they are going to find something to put in His place. Romans chapter 1, verse 25. Because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Whether it was the Old Testament pagans, whether it's the modern day Wiccans, whomever it is, what they are seeking to do is to find a substitute for God. That's what Paul said in Romans. That's what God says to us today. Now, as we begin to draw things to a close, let me talk about one other idea. What about the pop culture aspect of all of this? It is no surprise to us that storylines that are based on magic have long been a part of our culture. And I just put up a list of very, very few that I thought of. I just sat down and started writing, see how many I could come up with. Wizard of Oz, you got the Wicked Witch, remember she melts there at the end. You got the Chronicles of Narnia with the White Witch. You've got almost every Disney cartoon ever made that has a witch or it's got somebody who can practice some kind of magic in it. Lord of the Rings would fit into this genre. Going back a little ways, maybe some of our younger kids don't remember these shows, but Bewitched. You had Samantha Stevens popping stuff up all the time. I Dream of Jeannie getting her master in trouble on a regular basis. More modern, the Wizards of Waverly Place, currently running now. Harry Potter, just to name a few. We know that this is a major part of entertainment. So what do we do as Christians about that? As we consider these shows, Christians have debated the appropriateness of participating in these things. You've got one side that says these things are anti-biblical and should be avoided. You've got another side who says these things are fantasy and imagination, and we understand that it's just a part of a story. Just somebody spinning a yarn. And I'll say this, there are strong arguments on both sides. You listen to people who strongly believe either of these two ideas, and you will hear some very good reasoning being brought out. Well, let me just say this. You've got to make a decision on that. You've got to look at what the Bible says, and you've got to decide, do you believe that if your child sits down and watches Sleeping Beauty and the old witch brings an apple, if that is showing something unbiblical, you've got to decide whether or not you believe that's appropriate. Or if you believe that it's fantasy, that it's imagination, you've got to come to an understanding of that. But whichever the case, I want you to consider some things with me. First of all, children, obey your parents. If your parents say, I don't want you watching this show, I don't want you going to this movie, I don't want you playing this video game, regardless of whether you agree with that or not, you are obligated to respect your parents' views on that. And there are parents who take a very strong stand and will say to their children, don't go to this movie. Children, obey your parents. Respect them in that. However, let me say something else. Parents, you be consistent with that. If you say, well, this movie coming out is not fit because it's got sorcery in it, be consistent. Don't pop in the Disney cartoons. I was reading this one man who took a very strong opinion against, he was talking specifically about Harry Potter movies. And he said, well, I'm not putting down anybody, but in my opinion, as long as I have C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien's writings for my kids to read, they don't need the writings of J.K. Rowling. And I thought, what? You look in the Narnia series, you got the White Witch, who's just about as bad as they come. You've got a book in that series called The Magician's Nephew. You've got in the J.R.R. Tolkien series, Lord of the Rings, magic being practiced. That's the kind of inconsistency I'm talking about. I think sometimes we kind of get on a bandwagon, so to speak, and we hear others talking about a particular movie or particular book, whatever, and we say, you're right, and we're not going to support that, and we're not going to be a part of it, but yet all of these other things are fine. Be consistent. If you believe that these things are not along the lines of the Bible, make sure that you let your kids know that. Such things would cause a lot of confusion with children, where one thing is told that they're told is wrong, but yet something very, very similar is okay. Let me say this as well. If you're a person who has difficulty separating fact from fiction, stay away from this. If you can read a book and you get so lost in that book that you actually begin believing some of this stuff is true, don't read it. Don't watch it. And there are people like that. There are people who have a difficult time separating that. I would also say if such works lead you toward humanism, beware of that. If you read these things and you begin fantasizing about how it would be if you had this magic and you kind of view yourself in this exalted sense, get away from it. Again, it would tie back into that idea. If it's leading you not to be able to understand the difference, it's something you don't need to be associated with. And finally, I would say, above all, don't allow anything to mute your view of an all-powerful God. If you cannot separate fact from fiction, if you read Harry Potter's wand waving and the Apostle Paul's miracle and you view them as equality, get away from those things. If you cannot separate those things, stay away, because nothing should ever minimize the power of God and the true miracles that were performed in the New Testament. And I believe when we look at these things, we each come to our own determination. Again, I'm not saying that we've got two different standards. What I'm saying is, it's something we each must decide in our hearts is right or wrong, and then practice that belief consistently. In the Old Testament, God warned that this stuff was associated with idolatry. If we read stuff where it's very obvious that it's associated with idolatry now, we need to stay away from it also. Whatever the case, though, God can never be minimized by whatever genre of literature or movies that we watch.